us. This morning we return to the practice of shamatha without a sign. The strongest example, the purest example, I believe, of a shamatha method that is really kind of all discovery, a matter of discovery rather than trying to generate or develop. It's a matter of discovering our own internal resources at a certain level, namely the level of the substrate consciousness, discovering the bliss, the luminosity, the non-conceptuality. What are the characteristics, the salient characteristics of substrate consciousness? It's already ours, so it's like owning a plot of land and being told you have enormous gold resources down there. It's this fantastic gold mine, or core of ore, of gold down below, but you have to, you have to excavate. And then, of course, we can ask, well, okay, what's in the way? How much is this going to cost? What's in the way? Do we have stone? What do we have? And so we can ask, what's in the way of discovering our own natural resources? What prevents us from discovering what's already there? And of course, one thing is looking elsewhere. That is, if it's inside and you're looking outside, you're looking in the wrong place, right? And so, obligations. So many people say, well, I really don't have much time for meditation. And overall, I would say there are two reasons for that. Everybody's got 24 hours, whether you're the Dalai Lama or whether you're anybody else. Everybody gets 24 hours a day. So everybody, in a way, is equally busy with something, even if it's napping. I'm sorry, I just don't have enough time. I'm too busy napping. Everybody's busy with something. We somehow fill the days, fill the hours of the days. And so one way we fill our days is with our fulfilling our commitments or obligations in the world. Family, having children is not trivial. Taking care of your children, providing them with an education, meeting all their needs, spousal relationships. One may run a business, then you have an obligation, you have commitments. This is not attachment, this is not craving, this is a moral obligation to care for your employees, to run a good business. And so there are many things like that. And they can be extremely demanding on the time. This is why a small fraction of the population decides to become monks or nuns, or yogis or yoginis, just so they have as few obligations out there as possible. They become homeless, and in a way, family-less. That was very clear in Tibet. If you have a child who goes up and becomes a monk or nun, you may never see them again. Geshe Rabdin, one of my primary teachers, when he left home, I don't think he ever saw his dad again. It was a 2-3 month journey to Lhasa, where he received his education. His father knew. His father was very, very attached to him, didn't want him to go. And then when he went, it was kind of like, okay, I've just lost my son. He's now joined another family. Setar Monastery in central Tibet. So, when you have so few obligations, then you have a lot more time for research and development, exploring your own mind. But apart from the obligations, there's also other great draws, and that is just addiction. Addiction to work and entertainment. Pretty much that boils down to those two things. Addiction to work, entertainment. Keep busy. Busy, 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 busy. When you get exhausted, entertain, entertain. Fall asleep. Wake up. Now work, 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 work. Getting tired? Entertainment, entertainment. Dead tired? Good. Fall asleep. And the life passes. And so the life passes overall because of our single-pointed pursuit of hedonic well-being. And the more focused we are on that, there's just less time for cultivating, exploring the possibilities of genuine happiness. So you kind of really have to turn down one to turn up other, because again, we only have 24 hours a day. So all of that, all of the preceding, those provide distractions, obstructions, obstacles to really exploring our own internal resources. Behind all of that, if we look now upon veil of what's obscuring, what's hiding our internal resources, The mental afflictions of craving and hostility, they really obscure. Hostility said to be like water just bubbling, 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 bubbling. So if you're trying to see through your awareness, right down to the ground, down to the substrate, then you can imagine if it's bubbling with anger, you can't see it. Ever look into a pot of boiling water? You can't see. Is it blah, 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 blah? You can't see through it. And likewise, when the mind is caught up with craving, then it's the water is tinted. It's colored. So if it's red, it's blue, it's green, then you can't see through it because all you see is the color. So craving and hostility, they obscure. So these are the prerequisites for really venturing in deep into meditation. Avoid behavior which is a manifestation, an expression of craving and hostility, and then go in and see if you can release this grasping onto craving and hostility. And then in this practice, then we go deeper and deeper and deeper. So consider the forward motion. In the Dzogchen view. And this is not looking into ancient history, this is from day to day. There are times when our minds just dissolve into the substrate. That is, the coarse mind dissolves into substrate consciousness, and that just slips right into the substrate. And the nature of the substrate, the alaya, is not knowing. It's avidya, unawareness. It's in deep sleep, it's being comatose. It's deep sleep when you don't know anything. You don't even know your deepest sleep. So, I mean, you don't get anything at all. If you don't even know your deepest sleep, then you don't know anything beyond that either. You don't know nothing. So your substrate consciousness. So when you're reading it there, that's kind of really pretty stagnant. You just don't know anything. You're not even deluded. You're not even awake enough to be deluded. Right? Just don't know anything. Out of that emerges the substrate consciousness. Out of the substrate consciousness emerges this klishtamana. I'll just give the Sanskrit, klishtamana. This afflictive cognition, which is the coagulation of self, of I am. And then there's something over there. It's just something like, and then, some kind of a subject-object split. Ill-formed, ill-defined, but nevertheless coagulated, separated. The foundation is laid now for bifurcation. And then out of this come manas, mental cognition, and mental cognition is involved in all the appearances of this, that, and the other thing. And then out of that comes craving, hostility, and then all of samsara. So in this practice of awareness, we're not only moving inwards beyond the threshold of craving and hostility, but even that level of manas, of mental cognition, which is caught up in appearances, this, that, objects, subjects, and all of that. We're withdrawing from that. We're withdrawing from appearances. We're shutting down manas in a way. Because manas is involved with the appearances. Oh, this, this, that, that, that. And now with awareness of awareness, with withdrawing from all signs, all appearances, recoiling, retracting, withdrawing, right? But now what's the next lion at the gate? It's guarding the internal resources. You're not getting through. You have to pass by me. It's klishtamana. Klishtamana. The afflictive cognition. Afflictive cognition. That I'm watching some sense of self in here. Coagulated, separate. The lion at the gate. Are you going to get by me? That's where this morning's practice goes. More subtle than the sense of I am the agent, I am doing, even when you're not doing, even when you're just sitting there, quietly minding your own business, there's the lion at the gate. I'm watching. I'm meditating. I'm over here. I'm in here. That stands between you, your awareness, and substrate consciousness. So, in this practice, we open the curtain on the Wizard of Oz to see, is there really anybody in there? Just watching quietly. I am. And see whether there's anybody watching. If you can break through that, if that evaporates, it's not punching through it. It's just seeing That Wizard of Oz is merely an appearance. It's not a person. There is an appearance, but it's not a person. It's not somebody watching. It's just an appearance or a conceptual construct. If you can see through that and it evaporates, then you can slip into substrate consciousness. Now, when you achieve shamatha, let's go the Theravada route, for example. Or it could be this settling the mind in this natural state route. Let's go settling the mind. What are you attending to? Space of the mind and whatever arises within it. And then after a while, stage 7, stage 8, your senses really implode. They implode more consistently. All you're left with, your world now, is just the space of the mind and its contents. But then the contents get less and less and less and less until no contents. It's just the space of the mind. It's just the substrate. And the very nature of the substrate is not knowing. So you can just hang out there if you wish. You can. It's called resting in the Bhavanga. You just hang out there. Whoa. It's a whole lot of nothing. Sure is. Not much happening, but it's certainly peaceful. You just sit there. You can just sit there gazing at the substrate. Or you can do something more interesting. You can now invert your awareness right in upon the substrate consciousness. Probe into that very luminosity. And then know that substrate consciousness. And then fully experience its bliss, which is right there. Its luminosity, right there. Its non-conceptuality, right there. So now, good, you've tapped into the gold mine of your substrate consciousness. Very ripe situation. You've broken down the barriers. And then if you want to just continue on that same trajectory, then as Shapkar Rinpoche says, as you're inverting awareness in upon itself, now having come and rested in the substrate consciousness, don't just revel in it. Don't just bathe in it. Don't just enjoy it. Probe into the very nature of that consciousness, experiencing not only its luminosity, but probe into its emptiness. Ascertain that non-duality of the luminosity and the emptiness of your own awareness, and then just rest there, not doing anything, not activating the relative mind at all. Then you might find much deeper resources. Rigpa. So the path is quite simple, actually. But it does mean we need to create some space, overcome old addictions, and break down barrier after barrier, so we can see where our own barriers are, what catches us up. So even when we're in an utterly conducive environment like this is all like almost like a pure land. I mean, how much better could it get, you know, an environment like this? And then we see, what's the resistance? Why aren't we meditating 24 hours a day? Why only 23? You know, what's the problem with that 1 hour? You're just goofing off, you know, just slipping into the substrate? What was wrong with being lucid in the substrate? You know, so if it's only 23, you might want to check that out and say, okay, I'm sorry, I'll work on it. Okay, or 22, you know, wherever you are, will find yourself. Just find, where's the resistance? Break through it. So that's enough. Let's practice shamatha without a sign. Padmasambhava style. with your awareness permeating the field of the body, settle your body in a posture of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. And give away each out-breath as if it were your last, releasing it all to the final drop. And allowing the next in-breath simply to be given without taking it, and being satisfied with whatever's given, deep or shallow, short or long. Surrender all control over the breath. Release all concerns about the future and the past. With your eyes open, your gaze gently cast downwards. Let your awareness come to rest in stillness in the present moment. Without meditating on anything, without doing anything. Just being present. Without distraction. Without grasping onto anything. Then as the presence of awareness becomes more and more clear, rest in that awareness of awareness, giving no attention to anything else, to no appearance. Keep it simple and be satisfied with just resting in that knowing of being aware. Then know a bit more vividly. Withdraw, concentrate, focus your awareness in upon that experience of being aware, single-pointedly. Release your awareness out into space with no object, gently sustaining the flow of awareness of awareness. Releasing excitation as you release your awareness, overcoming laxity as you arouse and focus your awareness inwards. Each cycle, a complete meditation session in itself, overcoming the imbalances of attention. Especially as you release all thoughts, release into non-conceptuality. And invert into sheer perception. An immediate, conceptually unmediated knowing of knowing. Substrate consciousness, knowing itself, without words or language or concepts. And now what stands in the way of conceptually unmediated substrate consciousness, knowing itself? As you probe inwards, attend very closely, discerningly. To see what is your sense of being the observer, someone in here, a subject. Versus an object. Look for something that is present, not for something that's not. As you probe inwards upon the observer, what comes to mind? Does it have a face, this observer? Does it have boundaries? Invert and release. And as you invert, whatever appearance comes to mind, observe that which is observing that appearance. Probe more deeply. And as you probe inwards, deeply inwards, if no appearance has come to mind, only a vacuity, then examine closely. Who or what is it that is observing this vacuity, this absence of appearances? Invert and release. Then release the oscillation. Let your awareness come to rest in its own place, knowing itself. Oh, not so. In this pretty near ideal environment, let's simply fill the day with Dhamma as much as we can. At least presence of mind.
Good.